Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Hi, everyone. I'm Vincent Joe.
Hi, I'm Kathy Reed.
And I'm Allison Reed.
Hi, I'm Ashley.
Hi, I'm Grace.
We're from the Haydenettes.
I am Mark Henretti.
Ciao a tutti, siamo Rebecca Ghirardi.
E Filippo Ambrosini.
E vi diamo il benvenuto a
This Weekend Skating.
Welcome to This Week in Skating, the weekly podcast bringing you the latest news from the world of figure skating. Here are your hosts, Daphne, Gina, and Matteo.
And we are back with another episode of This Week in Skating. This week, we are doing an interview, or rather another mini episode of Storytime with Anne. We know that you guys love these episodes, so we decided to come back with it again this month.
Yeah, and you've heard her talk about the 1994 U.S. Championships, the 1998 Goodwill Games. This time we're going back more than 60 years to the 1960 Winter Olympics. So, Anne, I can't wait to hear this story. Welcome back to This Week in Skating. My first question for you. You grew up in New England. How did you end up in California for the 1960 Winter Olympics?
Well, my senior year at college, a friend and I decided that we would like to go to California to teach. So we got out a map of California. We looked at all of the cities that were surrounding Los Angeles because I had relatives there. And we sent letters. And the one city that sent us both offers for teaching were in San Bernardino. Unfortunately, at the last minute, she got engaged, so she decided she wasn't going to go, and I trotted off by myself to this strange land where everything was so different from what I had grown up with.
So did you drive cross country from New England to California?
No, I flew, actually. And I still have my ticket, which was $325 one way on American Airlines.
Oh, my goodness. That's not that different from today, because when I book my flights, a lot of times I'll book one way and then book the other part later because I don't know when something's going to end or when I want to come home. You had told me a really interesting story, and I wanted to get into this a little bit before we start talking about the Olympics. When you were teaching out in California, being from New England, being from Massachusetts, your accent, you know, having lived there your whole life, became a thing at the school. And so I kind of wanted to give you a chance to talk about what that was like.
Well, it was very interesting because I was parking the car in the Harvard yard, like all New Englanders do.
Yes.
And I was teaching seventh grade, and I had a call from my principal who came down and said to me, "Anne, the accent is delightful, but the children don't understand a word you're saying. You need to do something about it." So I very consciously put R's where they should be and took them out of where they shouldn't be. And now I have no New England accent, except when I go back home and I'm tired. Sometimes
yes.
it comes out. And when I listen to you sometimes, because I hear familiar strains.
Yeah, I try to hide it some when I'm having conversations just because I want people to be able to understand me. And I also talk really fast, so I try to slow down. But when I'm exhausted, it is all Mainer all the time. Or maybe I should have said, it's all Maina all the time. Because that's kind of what it is. It just all comes out. And yeah.
Well, a side effect of that also is that I married a Southerner from South Carolina.
Oh, boy.
And we had our wedding in Berkeley because he was a graduate student. And when my family came parking the car and his family came with y'all doing this, it was quite an interesting time.
Well, we won't even mention the Western
imagine.
New York accent over here.
You know, it's funny because in podcasting, I have tried really hard when it comes to doing the TV show podcasts to cover up my New England accent. But I've also gotten messages from people who love it. So it's kind of hard to, you know, when I'm more tired, it comes out. When I'm talking about a specific thing, you know, you try really hard, but it just comes out. And so people actually said to me also, well, are you faking your accent? Well, no. What's happened is because I've spent so much time covering it up, I've now got a mishmash of things. And it is what it is. It's too late for me to go back and change it now.
Well, I've lived all over the country, and occasionally I'll hear the Wisconsin accent come out and sometimes the Pennsylvania one. So I'm me. I just speak.
Is there an Arizona accent?
Not really, that I'm aware of. We have people from all over. Arizona, because of the climate, people come here from all over. So there is that type of different accents that you hear.
So let's jump into this whole Olympic experience. How did you end up going to the Winter Olympics? I mean, other than they're in California, so the proximity was there. How did you end up getting tickets and having this adventure?
One day at school, one of the fellow teachers told me that she had seen an ad on television for the Olympics that were coming to Northern California in 1960. And she jotted down an address for me. And that evening, I contacted a couple of friends that I had made in my early days in San Bernardino. And we talked about it. We looked at a calendar and we discovered that the first weekend was Washington's birthday. So we could go on Friday after school and then spend Saturday and Sunday and then drive back home on Monday. So it was convenience for us to do that. And we got our tickets and put them away because Christmas came. And then finally, it was February 18th when the event began, February 18 to 28. And we decided that we would drive, like I said, up to Reno and stay in Reno, which was about 45 minutes away from the venue. And that we did. But before we actually left on Friday, Thursday, they had the actual opening ceremonies. They were in the afternoon. Unfortunately, they had a major blizzard, and that meant that they had delay. And the vice president, Richard Nixon, was there, and Carol Heiss took the oath for all the athletes, and Walt Disney did the production. And he brought in all kinds of high school bands and high school choral groups and Hollywood celebrities. He actually also took care of the torch run, which started in Los Angeles, and there were over 700 high school kids who ran that that run, and it landed there, of course, in time for the opening ceremony. It was telecast by delay on Thursday night on CBS. CBS, it was the first time that a television station had actually bought rights exclusively to the Olympics. So they televised the event, several of the events. Most of them were delayed broadcast, of course, on tape. And it was interesting how the tapes were done. At the end of the day, they would take all the tapes and they would put them on an airplane and they would send them to New York to be processed so the people could see them at 11 o'clock at night for 15 minutes every night. Delayed.
Wow. Wow. Yeah.
I don't think we can ever really complain again about what coverage we get, because I can't imagine getting just 15 minutes. And that's everything. That's like highlights. It's not even...
not a full competition, you know, or a full event.
So, and I think sometimes people forget, California is a really big state. How long did it take you to get from San Bernardino to Northern California?
Almost 9 hours. So we left about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We were really scared because we had heard about the blizzard and we were kind of scared we might hit it, but we didn't. We survived and we got there after midnight in Reno and checked into our hotel. We were all very excited and anxious, so we didn't sleep much. And we got up the next morning early, and we were looking around for a place to have something to eat. And we found this drugstore that said it had a counter in it. So we went inside, and we had some toast and some coffee and some juice. But the funny thing about it was, sitting on the counter were slot machines. We were in Nevada, where gambling was legal. Now, three of my friends were from Iowa, and I was from Massachusetts. So we had never seen anything like that. So that was one first interesting stop. We then drove 45 minutes through the canyons, looking at the mountains. The mountains were gorgeous. It was 30 degrees, and it was sunny. And we arrived at the venue for the event. And it's interesting because it was in a valley, and a businessman who was quite wealthy, he owned what was called the Squaw Valley Resort. And the Squaw Valley Resort only had one small building for a hotel and one ski lift. And he convinced the Olympic Committee that the best thing to do would be to have this event on basically virgin snow, where nothing else existed. Obviously, the Europeans were not happy. They had had every single Winter Olympic since 1924. They didn't want to come all the way to the United States. Not only that, they didn't want to come across the United States. So it was a long distance. The elevation was 6,200 feet. And they did not think that was going to work. Plus, they were concerned that if they put in all new equipment, would it have been tested? They were a little afraid that maybe it might not be a good idea. They fought it, but the Olympic Committee gave the hosting job to them, to the gentleman who owned the land, and he had to promise that he would raise $8 million and in order to be able to create this venue. And he did. And as we walked to the event, there were all these buildings. One of the things that he was very adamant about was that everything had to be able to be walked to. Of course, not the mountains, but everything down below. And also, it was the first time that they actually built an athlete's village. And they created this off from the main venue. And it was within 10 minutes walking distance. So the athletes could just walk, and they did, right down the Athletes Avenue. And they had their own little ice rink there, which I thought was kind of interesting that they had that. I don't know if it was for everybody to use or just the people who needed it for skating. But it also was interesting because all the athletes stayed together for the first time. There was no USA building, French building, German building, et cetera. They were all together in this one venue.
And like you said, all the buildings were in walking distance from each other.
Right. Everything was right close. So we got there. When we got there, we looked around to see where we should go in first. We went in where we should go first. Well, the very first thing that we spied was the outside oval for speed skating. So there was scheduled to have a speed skating event there, and we got there in time for it. Now, this was the first time that ladies were allowed to participate at the Olympics in speed skating. So not only did we see the first event there, a speed skating event, but we also saw the first ladies. I don't have any idea what they did. All I know is that we're chasing each other around the oval, and it was fun to watch, and people were clapping. You had to stand around. There were some benches, but by the time we got there, they were pretty well taken. From there, we decided, let's walk over to one of the other open rinks. And when we got there, there were some skaters that were practicing. They were practicing their compulsory figures, which was an interesting thing. And then we just walked. You could walk everywhere. They had a Nevada and an California buildings for hospitality where you could go in and buy food. They also had warming huts. And that's the one thing of all the things that I remember was my feet were so cold. Because we walked on snow.
Yeah.
And so, I had boots.
Wow.
But yeah.
So you were able to go, walk around wherever you wanted to go. I'm going to ask the question about a ticket. What was the ticket like? It allowed you to go and do everything. And I'm guessing that price of that ticket was on the relatively cheap side.
We each purchased two tickets that cost $7.50 each day. Now that allowed us to go to all of the outside venues. We could not go into Blythe Memorial Arena where the figure skating and the ice hockey were held. Now they did have a few hockey games outside on those. There were two besides the speed skating oval. There were two of the regular rinks, and that's where the skaters were practicing. And also they had a few hockey games out there, the early round robin hockey games. But as they got higher, they moved them inside. So we were not allowed to go to inside those venues, that venue. So we didn't see any skating other than practice.
$7.50.
Oh, yeah. And we also got
to go to the Olympics.
We could also ride on the chairlift up to the mountains, which we didn't do. But
how do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
We could have. So the only thing we were excluded from was that Blythe arena. But if we wanted to go all week instead of just the one day, we could have bought a $60 ticket, which let us in there for just the same things for the whole week. Or for $200 for the whole week, we could include an assigned seat for all that went on inside the arena.
Oh my goodness.
I just can't believe that at all.
No, that is wild to me.
Parking was $5. Almost as much as the ticket.
Wow.
I know some of our listeners right now have to be going crazy because they're spending more money for all event tickets for certain events, nationals, worlds, and you went to the Olympics for less than what people are paying to go to an event all week. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
So there wasn't any ski jumping that went on, but you did get to watch some of the runs, correct?
They had only for ski jumping, they were just having exhibition, and it was going to be held on the last day just after the exhibition for skating. And when we were there, we watched them practicing. They came down and they came right near the arena, actually. And it was fun because people were not standing as they were watching it. They were sitting on broken down cardboard boxes. People had brought in their own boxes, and that's what they were sitting watching this. They were practicing these jumpers. They weren't competing, but they were practicing.
Well, I can imagine sitting on the broken down cardboard box would be a lot warmer for you behind than sitting on the snow.
Exactly. I know, because walking on the snow is bad enough, but sitting on it would have been terrible. We stopped on our way home that night at a grocery store, and they thought we were crazy, the people. They didn't know why we wanted broken down boxes. We ended up with, I guess, two full ones, and we shared those. So we watched it on Sunday with our box. But then after we got through, we ended up putting them into a trash can.
Yeah, that reminds me, the boxes. I go to the Little League World Series every year, and the cardboard boxes that the kids will get from wherever to slide down the hill. If you ever watch the Little League World Series, mm-hmm. they'll slide down the hill. There's so much cardboard that gets left at the bottom of the hill after the series is over. And so it sounds like you guys asking for cardboard boxes just brought back that memory there.
Wow.
But yeah. And you mentioned that Disney was involved in the opening ceremonies. Were they involved in other ways throughout the Olympics?
Yes, they were. They built these snow statues. They had to have them built back in down in Southern California with all kinds of metal netting and whatnot. And what they were, there were 30 of them. And they had nine ladies athletes and 21 men athletes. Already there was a little bit of
unjust injustice there. But they were statues, and on the base of the statue was the name of one of the California cities that was sponsoring it and paying for it. And these were lined along the Avenue of the Athletes, and they were scattered around. I even have a photo of me in front of the one from Palm Springs. And the statues were of the hockey players, the speed skaters, the skiers, the figure skaters, and they were really very, very nice. And it was kind of fun. Walt Disney also built the where the victory ceremonies were held, and it was a huge metal piece that was like 75 feet high and 20 feet wide, and perched on the top were the Olympic rings. And then across the entire thing were crests of each one of the 30 countries that were participating in the event. And so at one point we watched both Saturday and Sunday night. We did, not night, it was kind of about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We went to see the victory ceremonies. And apparently, I read later that was unusual, that they used to not even allow the public to see the ceremonies. So this was something new. And of course, Walt Disney did it with all his productive glory. It was beautiful.
Now, you said that you weren't able to go inside the Blythe Arena, but you did get to see some hockey games.
Yes, we got to watch a couple of the hockey games each day. And it was cold just standing there or sitting there. So people tended to keep moving around. It was almost like you visit this venue because everything was outside. You could sit there or stand there for a while, watch the skating, watch the hockey game, then move on to something else. And so it was almost constantly in motion. So you didn't really park yourself there all of the time. But one of the things that is interesting is that we were not allowed to go into Blythe Arena. But 2 years later, guess what? I was teaching in the Bay Area, Oakland, California. I joined the UC Berkeley Graduate Club. And guess where we went for a weekend? We went back up to the venue, and guess who got to skate 2 days in Blythe Memorial Arena? Everybody else wanted to ski. I wanted to skate, and I did.
So you got to skate on Olympic ice.
Yes, I did. Hmm. Yes, I did.
Very cool.
So let's talk a little bit about the skating. This was before Ice Dance was part of the Olympics. So there were only three disciplines. Back then it was ladies, not women, ladies, men, and pairs. This was a very significant year for Team USA because the following year we lost so many athletes in the plane crash. Looking back at it, it was so devastating. In the past couple of years, especially, we've lost athletes through tragic circumstances. But this Olympics was definitely a major highlight for Team USA. I mean, Carol Heiss won the Olympics in the ladies' event. David Jenkins won gold in the men's event. And we got a bronze medal in the pairs event with Nancy and Ron Luddington. Really, you know, this was the Olympics for Laurence Owen, who was sixth in ladies. Maribel Owen and Dudley Richards were 10th in pairs. They were, of course, killed in the 1961 World Championships, the crash. This was also the debut of the Proto Popovs.
There is one interesting thing here. Barbara Rolls was the bronze medalist in ladies. And she retired right after the event, as did Carol. Carol retired and got married to the 1956 gold medalist and the brother of David Jenkins. But Barbara retired And she had a child. And when the crash occurred, she came back. And in 1962, she won the U.S. National Championships. And then she tried out for the 64 Olympics, but unfortunately did not make it. And then she permanently retired. So there is even another little tie to that situation.
So what was it like, Anne, going back to work after this amazing adventure that you had?
It was a letdown. It really was a letdown because we were hyped up. We had been running around seeing all of these things. And of course, everybody wanted to know all about it. Nobody, unlike today, they hadn't seen a lot of it on television when we got back, because the only thing they had seen were those 15-minute clips at night and part of the opening ceremony. So it was kind of, we wanted to share, but at the same time, there wasn't that crazy enthusiasm that we usually have after spectacular things that happen. But the following weekend, on Saturday, one of the things that was televised completely was the U.S. versus the Soviets in ice hockey. And that was a big thing. And the U.S. team of a bunch of college kids, again, 20 years beforehand, who ended up winning 3-2. They beat the Soviets. And that night, CBS did something that was very unusual. They changed their schedule for Sunday so that they could televise the Sunday game between the U.S. and Czechoslovakia, in which the U.S. won again 9-4, and they beat, they won the gold.
So,
and I was excited because two guys that we all heard about all the time back in Cambridge, Billy and Bobby Clary, were on that team. And my parents were good friends with his dad. And so their dad, I should say. And there was that connection. So I was really, really excited to be watching on my little Admiral screen that was tucked into this great big console.
So this sounds like it was the first miracle on ice. That 1980 was the second miracle on ice.
Well, because I think the problem was people weren't watching as much of it the first time. Al Michaels wasn't there. Had he been there, maybe we would have had more alert for that, but he was not there.
Well, you can hear Al Michael every, I don't know how many minutes it is, in Lake Placid on a loop.
You can. I've heard that way too many times to count the number of times I've been in Lake Placid and all the tours that go through and the TV is on and people are reliving these experiences that happened in the 1980 arena. It's pretty incredible.
One thing did come out of this was instant replay, because the officials were unsure of whether a skier had missed a gate.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked CBS TV if they could review a videotape. And that was the beginning of instant replay.
So this was a poignant Olympics as far as the things that were done at this event for the first time.
Yeah.
That's amazing to think about that, because I've always thought about, oh, the 60 Olympics, Carol Heiss won. I didn't know all of this deep dive, and I think it's pretty fascinating, and how exciting for you that you were there.
Yeah.
One thing that is funny is when we got our tickets, with it came this booklet
which
she
you can
still
see.
Has it.
And she has
she's holding it right
old.
Now for you people.
And it is the facts and figures of Olympics. And two things in there caught my eye as being so dated. They were questions and answers. The first question was, will you be able to send telegrams?
Telegrams. Okay.
Western Union and Press Wireless will have facilities for you.
Did you send a telegram, man?
More fun. How about telephones? The Pacific Telephone and Telegraph Company has installed 80 public booths at various convenient sites.
Wow. Now you don't see payphones. No. Like, I don't see payphones out and about.
I think the last one I was in college that I saw one. Yeah.
Wow.
Did you send a telegram at all?
No.
And thank you for coming on again and sharing this magical adventure that you had going to the Olympics. There's one thing that you wanted to mention at the end of the episode, and so I wanted to give you the opportunity to do that.
I purposely tried to avoid, and I think I did it once, stating the name of the actual venue where the event was held. It was called the Squaw Valley Resort in Squaw Valley. 4 years ago, the people of the area, which is now developed amazingly, issued the following statement. In 2020, we came to the conclusion that it was time to change our name. The reasons were clear. The old name was derogatory and offensive. It did not stand for who we are or what we represent. And we could not, in good conscience, continue to use it. So we began a long and difficult process. The area is no longer called Squaw Valley Resort. It is called Palisades Tahoe, and it is no longer located in Squaw Valley, but in Olympic Valley, California, USA.
We also had a mountain in Maine called Big Squaw, and it has been changed to Big Moose. So it's part of a wave of understanding terminology and realizing that some of it is offensive and needs to be changed. So kudos to them for realizing it and making the conscious decision to change it.
Right. We have one here in Arizona that was called Squaw Peak that has been changed.
Well, we will have Anne back because Storytime with Anne is our summer series. We started a little bit early, but we will have Anne back. She has lots more to share.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of This Week in Skating. Remember, you can keep up with us throughout the week by visiting our website at www.thisweekinskating.com. Connect with us on social media for additional updates. You can find us on Twitter at This Week in Skating without the E's, or Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at This Week in Skating. You got a burning question or feedback for Gina, Daphne, or Mateo? Reach out to us via social media or drop us an email at thisweekinskating@gmail.com. And if you're really enjoying the show and want to support us further, consider joining our Patreon community at patreon.com/thisweekinskating. Until next time, have a nice week.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job or your deodorant or your lunch or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.